Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Welcome. It's very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning. We're starting off a new month and in grand style with the panel we have before us. It's September 1st, and it should be a very nice month.
It can't hurt.
No, that's right. You can't hurt. We're going into a holiday weekend, and we got a lot to talk about this morning. A lot was happening in the world last night, so we'll talk about that. Let me introduce a panel to you. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning. And Alan, I would assume you're probably very, very tired this morning. Put that microphone in front of you.
I am tired because, you know, people think playing the banjo is an easy thing to do. It's not. It's very difficult, yes. Especially when you do it as well as I do.
Yes, oh, absolutely. Gosh. And you'll be singing.
Yeah, when you do it,
microphone right in front of you.
Right here, you mean?
No, when you're singing.
Oh, yeah. Except on the songs, I forget the words to.
That's right. Yeah,
then you can go somewhere else.
Well, then you can use the microphone as a way of covering your lips.
We are talking, of course, about what we're doing with the Arlo's Bring Your Own God Church in Great Barrington, and it's they're selling tickets, and you get them by going to hear the Berkshire Ramblers doing this benefit concert at 413-528-1955. Is that what I said?
Yes.
1955.
I believe that was the
wait year. A little while because they don't get there in the morning, and then they complain. I tell people to call too early, and that's the chutzpah factor.
Well, listen to the show, and then when you're done listening to the show, they'll be there by the time it's over, right?
Yeah, that
would be the way.
One can only hope.
Okay. Director of the Journalism Program. Here we go. Director of the Journalism Program at the University at Albany, Rosemary Armeo, joins us.
Good morning. I have nothing to sell this morning.
All right. Good. Excellent. And Poughkeepsie Journal is executive editor.
Executive editor, sir.
Stu Shinsky is with us. And, well, it's always a thrill to have you on the program. We love having you here.
Love being here. I have to disappoint people. I just don't perform anywhere except here. This is it.
Well, we're lucky
to
have you.
If I picked up a guitar, I'd probably drop it and break it.
You know, I don't mean to make anyone angry by saying what I'm about to say, but Alan and I talk to a lot of people that we think we would like to have on the panel, and they say, well, we can't drive, we can't do it, we can't come in. And you make the trip. And we just really appreciate that. It's very, very nice.
Wait, he's here because he'll drive?
No. We have people who we think would be great if they would come and join us, and they say, oh, well, I'm not going to drive for that. Mm-hmm. Yes, Stu, and he comes up and he does it. It's very nice.
And not only that, he's also good. I mean, that's what we
see. That's the part that was missing. We'd like to have a great person, but well, Stu drives.
No, that's not. Did you take it as a compliment?
I took it that way.
I did not. I mean, I drove in from Hong Kong this morning. Actually.
Yeah, actually. Yeah.
When I was in college a lot of years ago, the question was who had the car.
Well, of course.
Yes,
that's
every college.
Absolutely, that's a very important thing.
I'm always honored by the invitation.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here. Thank you very much. let's talk about what's going on. So Donald Trump went to Mexico yesterday. What did you do on your summer vacation? He went to Mexico yesterday. He met with the Mexican president, and then he gave a policy speech or rally or whatever it was in Phoenix, Arizona. Last night, that was televised, of course, by all the cable news networks, and I did watch it from beginning to end. And I don't know. I don't know what I got out of it, but I ask you as a panel of what we – has anything been illuminated here?
Yeah, I think his technique has been illuminated, which is nothing matters. You go and you sit with the Mexican president and say, we got along. There's some dissonance as to whether he told the Mexican president that they have to pay for the wall. In fact, it seems that he may not have brought that up at all. He goes back there. And it scares the hell out of me because I listened to that same thing you listened to, and it brought back scenes from the 1930s, early 1930s, yes, of screaming crowds, get rid of them, deport them, and basically they better. they just better build that wall, because if they don't, it's never said, it's never stated, dot, 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 and that scares me.
And yes, absolutely. And the other thing, too, is that there was all of this yelling and screaming, and it was a very high, it was much... I thought the sound was bad last night because it did come off extremely, I don't know, screaming,
frantic.
I guess. Frantic.
Mm, yeah.
And but the other thing too is that when you look at it and you try to parse it, which is difficult because it's sort of all over the place. But when you try to parse it, there are so many of the things that he talked about are already the policies that we have in place, the very ones that he kept on bashing over and over again. But then he called for the exact same policies. So I'm not exactly sure what the end game was.
Well, he wasn't talking to you. He wasn't talking to anybody on this panel. Mm-hmm. And William Crystal, not Billy, the actor, William, the conservative writer, I think had it right. He looked very good in Mexico. He stood up there just like Barack Obama does on a stage with a black background with the president of Mexico, and he looked presidential. I also don't really think he lied about the price of the wall, even if you listen. If you listen to what Trump said and then what the president of Mexico said, it came up at the very beginning. Hello, how are you? By the way, I'm never going to pay for that wall. And then they went and talked for a long time. Trump never brought it back up. His campaign said it wasn't a negotiation. So you can see him not doing it. That you don't start in a negotiation at the hardest point. You start at all the points of connection. So I think that both of them told the truth and didn't lie. And that was a win for him. And then he goes to Arizona, which is an act of great stamina, by the way. I think that was part of what he's trying to show also against Hillary. And gave one of those rip-roaring, xenophobic, horrifying speeches, but that totally plays to his base. And also, he just ended up looking kind of more reasonable to that crowd in the middle that hasn't quite decided or that could be persuaded to vote for him.
Clarify that. I don't know how that came out as reasonable.
How what came out as reasonable?
Well, you
his
said,
speech?
Yes.
Because he's backed away. Originally, what he was saying was 11 million people will be deported. Now he's saying, we're going to deport 11 million people. We're going to put together a team at ICE in order to find them. But we're going to prioritize. And first of all, it'll be the bad guys, the criminals who go out. But anybody who comes in will be matched against crimes. And they'll go out, too. Anybody who's arrested will look to see what their status is. And they'll go out,
and
too.
And the big thing is the border agents, right?
The border agents.
5,000.
Yeah. And then he ended up, he did have Mexico saying it's in the interest of both of us to protect that border. So we're going to work together. He did come off sounding more diplomatic and more reasonable than I wanted him to sound.
Yeah, it was buy one, get one with Trump yesterday.
Yep.
It literally was buy one, get one. You got in Phoenix the approach that has made him so successful within that element of politics. And then in Mexico, I almost thought he was...
sane.
Lucid?
Well, you know, I'm not even sure what the word is. I watched it and I was like, he just struck me as almost drugged to a degree.
I agree with you.
So incredibly different, so passive, so restrained. And that is his appeal, I guess, to those folks who say, hey, we need a president who just has to do more than stand at a podium and bellow. We need someone who can work with the diplomats, who can meet with the president, who can make that standing and represent the country. So I thought it was a buy one, get one.
Yeah, makes sense. We did hear from Rick. I don't usually read the letters till Joe calls on me, but Rick said, listening to Trump's speech last night, I imagine the sound turned down and hearing the words in German. And we also heard one for you, Stu, from Judy from Poughkeepsie. Said, "Thank you, Stu, for coming. I'm from Poughkeepsie. We like to hear our neighbors up there."
Thank you for listening. Pleasure to be here.
I do have to. I think that you know.
I think that's what Trump said in Mexico City. Those same words.
I know nothing about no stinking walls.
It was to me, though. I go back to, and I understand what you're saying, Rosemary. You know, the speech wasn't to us, and I get that. But I go back to Alan's words earlier, which I agree with entirely, is that it was. But it did come off as so, we use the word frenetic, but it was frightening,
and
it was and to me and several of us in journalism, I believe all probably all the people in this room have officially filed the paperwork to get rid of the word pivot. But we kept on hearing that there was going to be, and I didn't see any evidence of that, minor, but certainly not anything major, right?
I think it's wrong to see the speech as one isolated incident, and I think his campaign is working hard to make it a fabric of his campaigning. You have to see it in the context of going to Mexico and then of 2 weeks previous to that, backpedaling, softening, sounding more reasonable. That speech, that was one element directly to the crazies, to the trumpets. But the rest, you know, you got to see it as part of it. And you watch them spin it this week. I want to hear Kellyanne on this.
Kellyanne Conway.
Kellyanne Conway, his campaign, I don't know what title he's using.
Campaign manager.
She's part of the team along with Bannon.
The
CEO. Colleen was saying this before. I think she's totally right. Bannon was the architect of the speech in Phoenix. Kellyanne was the architect of that reasonable, very statesmanlike appearance in Mexico City. And I think that's what he's smart enough to weave together, is that he can be everything to everybody. Didn't Barack Obama sort of do the same thing? Yes?
Not with as many differences. This was billed yesterday as a major immigration, a major stance or a major policy speech. It didn't strike me as anything all that different from what we've heard before.
Before we start getting the letters, I mean, I agree with you, Rosemary, but all politicians do that, right? I mean, as far as yes, Obama does.
Know your audience.
It's going to the audience, but what I think does seem rare is that 10 days of going back and forth and saying, well, he said this and that, and the campaign manager saying, you know, to be determined, we don't know, we'll see.
When it's over, Joe, when those 10 days are over, if you're a big supporter, you can say, see, he spoke in Phoenix, told you, said exactly what I said he was going to. And if you're somebody who's wavering, said, I don't really like Hillary, he did all right in Mexico, he could do it. You can take anything you want from those last 10 days of behavior.
If you make it vague.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to some letters. Alan?
Okay. Aileen says, I live in Mexico, and I'm originally from the northwest corner of Connecticut. The consensus here was just the opposite of what your guests are saying. Here in Mexico, Trump and Peña Nieto are both vilified, and the visit incurred the wrath of the majority of people here. Well, I thought, as I said before, that, here he is with a 20%, the president of Mexico with a 20% approval rating. I have no idea why he did this. It was a Hail Mary for him and a Hail Mary for Trump. But, yeah, I don't think the question is whether he's popular in Mexico. I think the
doesn't have any bearing at all. Unfortunately, those unhappy Mexicans are not voting in this election.
That's
so
right.
He doesn't give a damn about that.
Although, Rosemary, their relatives or people that they know or people who have immigrated to the States. I think that the problem for Trump is every time he does something like this to appeal to that nativist base, he alienates all those other people who need to be motivated to turn out. And every time I see something like this, I say, he's basically helping Hillary.
One thing we didn't mention was that as a result of the speech in Phoenix, he lost several key members of his Latino Advisory Council. They just go, whoa, wait a minute, we didn't sign up for this. And he lost them. So you're absolutely right about that. But I don't believe he's made any calculations at all, but I believe his people have made calculations. And they don't care about the immigrant vote. They're not looking for minority voters. They're looking for white votes.
Yes, but it's about turnout, Rosemary. It's about turnout,
which he mentioned several times last night. You know, get out, get out. It was more so than I had heard before about that idea of turnout.
And that's what I believe they're calculating, that they're going to get out the white vote. And they were successful in the primary getting out whites who had not previously voted. So I think that's what that's their calculus. So he doesn't care a whit if he's pissing off I got worked up.
Did you see that white?
Yeah.
When you mentioned
hit the red button.
When you mentioned The spin. I think the spin started last night. I thought, right? I mean, he said that Hillary didn't have the stamina. She was not doing anything. Where has she been? Meanwhile, I've been to Mexico. I've been doing this. I'm giving this policy speech. Now, the truth is she was giving a major speech to the American Legion.
And no one listened to it. And no one even came. There were empty seats at her speech.
So and was not broadcast live, I believe.
And
so,
what we didn't even mention, Joe, she gave a major policy announcement about treating and dealing with mental illness in this country. No one else has spoken about that ever. Rosalynn Carter, maybe, kind of in an ancillary way, has spoken about that. No coverage whatsoever.
She did pretty major in the 70s, but that was in the 70s.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
It's just not as magnetic as immigration. I mean, mental health is an important issue, a critically important issue, but immigration policies.
No, the difference is Trump.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
He is
the magnet.
That's what I'm saying.
He could be speaking about anything. Yeah. It's not immigration. It is Donald Trump, who truly is. I hate him. I hate that he's in politics, but he is a master at getting attention to himself. It is impossible not to cover him.
And there's also something to be said here about mental illness in this country. We don't want to pay attention to it. It is a huge subject. She's absolutely responsible for doing this. JFK did it also.
Right. You're right.
Yeah.
Right.
And yet she dares to give a speech about something that people would rather shove under the rug.
So there you go. All of you listeners are going to say, oh, you're talking about Trump again. You're part of the media, part of the problem. No, it is not the media. It is us. It is us as Americans. We like the show, and we don't like listening to the important stuff like mental health and support, truly supporting veterans, which is what her
speech
was.
I was there last night watching.
So was I.
Yeah.
I mean,
I didn't want to be. But you find yourself just not being able to turn it off.
For all the critics, just try to remember that he is substantially losing in the polls right now. So in other words...
Wait. Weren't you just saying yesterday it's really close, Alan?
No, it is really close.
I think the Electoral College is...
But it doesn't much matter, Rosemary. I mean, you can get on me for that. But the fact of the matter is... It's always better to be 5 to 10 points ahead than 5 to 10 points behind.
Okay, that I grant you.
And
I wish it were more substantial, I think, is our area of disagreement.
Well, sure.
Well, I don't think you disagree. I mean, you both said yesterday, we have to go to a break, but I think you both said yesterday that it comes down to it. Alan made the point, as it comes down to it, mm-hmm. I think all of us in this room, and I think many, just look at it and say, how is it as close as it is? Whether it's 5 points, 10 points, or 2 points, how is it not 80 to 20?
40% of America.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll go. We'll come back right after this. Good morning, and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok is here, and Rosemary Armeo and Stu Shinsky. We welcome your letters, roundtable at wamc.org, roundtable at wamc.org. We have some other things to talk about. I do want to get a little bit more into Hillary Clinton talking to the American Legion, and we were saying that not a lot was made of that speech. We want to talk about it a little bit, but before we do, we'll... catch up on some of the letters because we got quite a few of them in our break.
Anthony says, good morning, panel. Trump's visit to Mexico was more or less a photo op to help him look presidential. But if you study the image, there was no American flag behind him, thank God. Unfortunately, we have become the greatest marketing empire in the world, and this buffoon has latched onto it and is using it to a T past the Doritos. And what Hillary needs to do. I've heard after visiting Mexico, Donald Trump's poll numbers has significantly improved. Has anybody else seen that today? Overnight? 30?
No polls are done overnight.
Yeah, I don't. I mean,
if they improved, it's not because of Mexico. It's because of something that
he said last night that to watch the polls because they were improving, but I don't think there's been anything major.
And they'll change after the next press conference thing. So.
And Bill from Athens goes on to say, Hillary, on the other hand, is relatively invisible. And then, just sort of parsing the letter, she says, Hillary has a great number of potential surrogates who can do the talking for her. Jim Kaine, the folksy, very smart former governor, and her running mate, Joe Biden. Jim Kaine is the running mate. Joe Biden, our very popular president, vice president. Barack Obama with very high approval. Elizabeth Warren, darling of the socially conscious. And, of course, Hillary's own best friend, Bill Clinton. Hillary wants to maintain a low profile and let Donald Trump's ego undermine his own campaign. Then Hillary should use these popular surrogates as much as possible. And we've had several letters saying Hillary is smart enough to let the guy destroy himself.
She's got just a different agenda these days. She has had a 2-week fundraising blitz. She's going to raise millions of dollars this month. And that's interesting because she feels she needs that going into the final turn to the election. And she also has been doing mega prep for the debate, which Donald Trump has paid no attention to.
You know, the other thing, too, that struck me, I heard this morning, I heard him interview this morning, but Tim Kaine, I think we would all have all agreed in this room that Hillary is not always effective when she is talking on these programs, and can be her own worst enemy when she's having these in-depth interviews. Tim Kaine is great.
Good.
He's really good.
And he's a pit bull, too.
At getting the message out. And I hope they increase using him. Because we were talking during the break that Lewandowski, Corey Lewandowski, for the Trump campaign, is actually very good, too.
Actually, Mike Pence is also. I have not seen his use increase. He's still being used as mop-up. You know, Donald says something we all pay attention to, and he does the little
apology.
He's
along for the ride.
Well,
that's too bad.
They did have him out in the front of this, on the speech of what to expect, and kind of just set up the setup.
I'm going to pay attention to that. I did not notice it this time.
Alan Moore.
Jane says, I believe more and more that avoiding talking about Hillary and avoiding even showing her on the news except for emails is because she is a woman who has done a lot for people. Okay, that's what Jane said. And she says some other things.
Do you agree with that?
I think there's a definite bias against women by the people, the press, by everything in this country, yes.
Okay.
It's very subtle, and sometimes it's blatant.
Bill says, I've heard that after visiting Mexico, no, we already said that one, and let's see here. Anyone who thinks that Trump's xenophobic, racist antics are a harmless show, I've heard roundtable comments that the current rally attendees are there for entertainment value, needs to watch the German film translated Look Who's Back. An actor portraying a resurrected Hitler refuses to break character. Initially a comedy and talk show sensation, the film gets progressively darker to its chilling ending. It's very apropos to the Trump version of today's economic and immigration issues. And that's
thing you've heard on the show is that we have rejected all criticism that we're going overboard when we compare Trump to Hitler, and we have agreed that it is an apt comparison.
Well,
right, Alan?
It certainly sounded that way to me last night.
Yep.
Sent shivers down my spine. Stephen Pittsfield, I think Hillary is laying low on purpose. She knows Trump will continue being Trump, digging himself deeper because he doesn't have the restraint and self-control to be calm and moderate. Okay. Why can't Hillary's speeches be carried live? I can't stand seeing or hearing Trump. Please respond. Anybody want to respond?
Yeah, it all has to do with what you watch. When Hillary's speeches are shown live, including at the national convention, she does not get the numbers that Trump does. So you can complain and blame the media, but again, it goes back to our news consumers. We don't watch the boring, substantial people. We watch the entertainers.
And she's been out there. There's been stuff broadcast.
Rosemary, the Washington Post analyzed the Trump voters in the primary. There were not new voters.
I will have to go back and look at that. CNN reports otherwise.
In other words,
it was a regular old, same old white people who voted before.
Okay.
In other words, these were regular people who turn out. We do know that very few people, relatively few people, turn out in primary elections. So it would not be surprising for me to hear that they were the same old, because they're at tops 15% of the voters.
This was John King, you know, he of the wonky numbers in the magic board,
and
it was before my boycott of CNN, and they were looking at whether Bernie or Trump were bringing in new voters in the primary, and the numbers were shocking at that time. But I believe the Washington Post is on a mission to get out every piece of information about Donald Trump. I think their reporting has
been
deep.
Well, they've written the book.
They've
created a website with all these documents and everything from the book that, in essence, created the book. Yeah, it's all on the website.
And is that revenge? Some people, certainly Trump would see it that way because he has banned the reporters from his events. But I think you're seeing some of the major journalistic talent in this country coming out with information on Trump. So if it has something saying that the voters were not new, I would believe it. So I will look for that.
Phil says, Dear Roundtable, I wonder if Trump would deport all the undocumented workers he has hired, including all the models under his modeling agency who came to work without proper papers. And that's from Phil in Greenbush.
Did you ever think you'd be mentioning that during a coverage of a political campaign?
No, sir.
I got a letter, and I just read this because it was sent just to me. But it said, Joe, it's clearly time for some fresh inspiration when you start having your guests make comparisons between Donald Trump and Hitler. Shame on you. I beg you, cut the crap and talk about something useful. We've discussed this before, but I don't know. Isn't that useful? Like, I don't.
You think as a trained political scientist or journalistic professor that if these comparisons are apt and if they put chills up your spine, that you're not supposed to say it?
There is something about the Hitler era and the Holocaust that is sacrosanct, and the media is always blasted if they make comparisons back to that, and sometimes we're wrong. I once edited an architectural column that compared a building to something built by Albert Speer, the Nazi architect, and we got blasted for that, just totally blasted. So I understand that it's something you approach and only say if there are apt comparisons. In this case, I think there are really
apt
close
comparisons.
Parallels.
And it's not just, you know, this program or other, you know, similar programs saying this is on social media. This is out there everywhere. This isn't something that we invented in this room or the folks in this room invented at any point. This is a widespread topic that has been out there for a long time, not just in the last couple of weeks or couple of months.
There's a very interesting set of why historians hate Trump, and it started with Ken Burns, who was a very spoken out really publicly against
Trump.
David McCullough and a bunch of other. It's fascinating. Yeah. And they actually did. They don't regard it as crap, as our reader does, as our listener does, but regards it as, there are parallels here, and we ought to be aware of it. Vote for him if you want, but know what you're doing.
It's for the techniques, and know a little about history. Remember that Hitler lost elections quite badly, and then he kept saying, Trump keeps saying, it's going to be a rigged election. And then came the brown shirts, and then, you know, I mean, there are comparisons here.
So. Speaking of rigged elections, the Supreme Court kind of took a step yesterday that was interesting.
And that's in North Carolina. We can talk about that when we come back for a break. Let's take a letter or two, then we'll take a break, and we'll come back and we'll discuss that.
Trump's policy technique reminds me of Muhammad Ali's dance like a butterfly. Let's hope, pray, that come November he can't sting. That's a letter. And Wayne says, can we get Trump to wear a top hat when he turns into Mr. Trump Hyde? And then let's see here. Sandra says, sorry, first sentence should have read, I don't think a person is sane to run for president.
I think it was an update to an earlier letter, but basically saying anybody who runs for president is insane.
Well,
I don't know if I disagree with that.
Boy, it's true. I mean, look at just the schedule they keep. For a year and a half now, they've been doing two appearances a day and speeches.
And that's just the prelude.
I know. And yeah, it's not.
And then you got to do the job, right?
Yeah.
And our friend Witt says, stop talking about DT. We know where he stands. Tell us about the very interesting and important policy that Hillary has on mental health and every other issue that affects everyone in our nation. And all like that.
It raises a great point, that question, because there has been a lot of substantive talk about substantive issues, but it doesn't resonate.
It just does not catch fire.
I mean, the little comments here and there off of each campaign, the sort of asides, that's what, you know, gets the social media all in a flurry.
Yep.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Supreme Court in North Carolina and voting and other stories after this short break.
Support for WMT comes from CIA Security Systems, specializing in installing, repairing, and converting existing residential and commercial security systems in the Hudson Valley to a locally owned monitoring response station, CIASecurity.com. Subsidium Technologies, a single point of contact for area enterprises to identify cloud-related technology, SubsidiumTech.com. And the Arts at Hotchkiss, Lakeville, Connecticut, presenting the art of brothers Alan Blagden and Tom Blagden, Jr. in the Tremaine Art Gallery, reception and book signing September 10th at 4. Hotchkiss.org/arts.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Stu Shinsky. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. The Supreme Court will not allow North Carolina in the November election to use its strict voting law that a former court found was enacted, quote, with almost surgical precision, end quote, to blunt the influence of African-American voters. An evenly divided court said Wednesday that it would not restore the law that a unanimous panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit found unconstitutional.
Yeah, more proof that the Supreme Court was wrong to defang the voting rights bill. This is a horrible law. And while it's completely impolitic to say this, I'm once again glad that Scalia is dead. This would never have happened otherwise.
Okay.
No, but Rosemary makes a point. Forget about the glad that Scalia is dead. We all know that that will bring admonition. But
I'm glad he's off the court.
Yes,
it would never
that's
have happened.
Right.
That's a better way of saying it.
Yeah. It would have likely have taken
off
it to a 5-4 vote.
Scalia would have voted. And that's why, with a 4-4, and remember that the lower court did the right thing here.
Yes.
And now the court is 4-4, and that is why this election should be all about the major branch of government, the Supreme Court. No,
that's true. That's true. But it also is all of these stories about voter right bills are scary to me because we're thrown back into the 60s. These laws are so regressive. They're so oppressive to minorities and they're so unnecessary. Let us repeat. There is virtually no voter fraud in the United States.
And look how far this got. This got to the United States Supreme Court.
Right.
Yeah. One vote.
For this,
it
you know,
would
local
be the law
vote,
of the land.
For local voting laws in North Carolina, it got to the United States Supreme Court. That tells you the issues there and how they're dealt with.
The court's short order did not give the justices reasoning. It was not a ruling on the merits of the law, but instead on an emergency stay request filed by the governor, Pat McCrory, the Republican, to use the law this fall as the state had in previous elections.
Look, the Republicans have consistently come up with ideas in the name of voter integrity, which, as Rosemary points out, is ridiculous because we can't see any voter fraud. The idea that people should be limited, they should have cards, they should have this, they should that. Well, in the old days, we know what they did. They asked you to recite the Constitution. And this is sort of in the same genre. We know that the more you do it, the fewer Democrats, fewer poorer people are going to vote. It's that simple. And, you know, you'd have to be, you know, not having all your facilities, not to recognize that there are certain things we don't say.
No, I hope that activist young people are paying attention to this. It isn't just the laws, which are bad enough, and they are at least being stopped in the courts. We had a story not long ago in Georgia where sheriff's deputies were going around to black people and saying, you know, show me your ID, taking a check at them, putting them, these were perfectly law-abiding people, but putting them on notice that if you show up to vote or if you show up in any place where you have to show your ID, you are subject to arrest.
This is just the latest thing, voting while black.
Yeah, it's that we're back in the Jim Crow era.
Reverend William Barber, who is president of the North Carolina NAACP, who gave one of the most, I thought, effective and fiery speeches at the Democratic National Convention, and when he was done, you were like, please run for president. He said, today we achieved another major victory for justice, African-Americans, Latinos, and to all North Carolinians. The critical rejection of the state's position will allow the people of North Carolina to exercise the fundamental right to vote this November without expense of restrictions by racist politicians or racist policies.
McCrory, he's a very interesting governor, isn't he? He's managed to put himself at the front of both anti-gay measures and now anti-minority voting measures. What is he hoping to get from this, right? Why is that a position? Why are those positions you take in 2016?
I was just going to say, here we are in 2016, and look where we are.
Yep.
Look at, you know, forget the presidential election, forget Hillary, forget Trump. Look at the polarization of the country, the incredibly complex and even conflicting viewpoints that are clashing every single day in every single way, it seems.
I do want to spend a few moments on the New York Times special report that was released about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. And basically the point of this very long, detailed article, which is interesting reading if you get a chance, it is how Russia often benefits when Julian Assange reveals the West's secrets. American officials say that Mr. Assange and WikiLeaks probably have no direct ties to Russia intelligence services, but the agendas of WikiLeaks and the Kremlin have often dovetailed. That's the basic point of the article.
Mm-hmm.
What did you make of it?
Well, you know, look, we know where they are. We know that Putin and Trump have been talking each other up. And we know that there seems to be some affinity there with WikiLeaks. On the other hand, Rosemary, the journalism professor, and Stu, the editor, know very well that you really can't, if somebody comes up with information, you got to go with the information. You got to use the information. You can't say, we're not going to use it because of the source, even though we may believe it's true. Am I right about
mm-hmm.
that?
I think Assange has began. I was a champion at the very beginning with the whole idea of transparency and information that government had, people should have too. But he has consistently proved himself to be a player rather than just a relayer of information. And I mean, in addition to helping Putin, I think Putin's involvement, Russian involvement in our electoral process, in our security systems is very troubling. And I hope someone is taking it seriously. I think he is helping them now, and so he is discredited. He also is like just released information without vetting it first, which is the simplest act of journalism, so that in exposing information, he's put out the names of gay people in Middle Eastern countries where they're subject to arrest and worse.
And where's
awful.
He getting it? Where is he getting all this stuff from? There's perhaps Russian intelligence helping
Does
at
make you
some
wonder.
Point. It is certainly a speculation point because, you know, he's not putting an FOI request to
That's
the Pentagon.
That's a great idea. That's a great point, Stu.
You know, where's he getting this stuff? I just wonder.
We do know that there's an awful lot of hacking going on, and we're being told that it's done by the Russians.
I just wonder.
Let's go to a couple of letters and wrap up in our final moments on this morning's program.
Okay. So, Mateo says, I'm a young person. I'm paying attention because I am listening to the roundtable.
Yay.
Good to have you.
I wonder if you're one of my students. A+.
And now vote.
And Arthur says, afraid. Alan, when you speak about it is scary, could you say more completely, say what is scary and what does it look like here? I haven't. That's from Arthur from the Fairhill Farm Writing Academy. I have spoken about it. I've spoken about the implicit threat, which is, and they are going to pay for it, parenthesis, or else. You know, that's scary. That brings you back to Czechoslovakia. It brings you back to, you know, Poland. It brings you back to the kinds of things that have been said before. Then we're hearing about it should be mandatory to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah,
mandatory. This is stuff that is just very familiar to me. Maybe because I'm old.
Mm-hmm. Another letter.
Thank you. For a listener who said comparing Trump to Hitler wasn't appropriate, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And that is from someone, M.E.K. Okay. And I was truly tightened by Donald Trump's speech of hate last night, and I do equate it with some of the speeches made in Germany in the 1930s. To illustrate the extent to which Trump spreads fear and hate, I've been a legal resident of this country for many years, an Australian national. I'm an intelligent and rational person with a postgraduate degree. However, I became so uncertain and bothered by his tirade, the very opposite of the words written on the Statue of Liberty, that I felt I needed to run my files to ensure that my resident green card was still valid and not about to expire. I'm okay and not about to be deported, but these politics of fear and hate are dreadful.
And there's hundreds of millions of people who are supporting him. He's got 40%.
Victor says, one of your panelists just implied that small side comments on the election were more important than the more substantive issue because they get social media all excited. There are 350 million people in this country and over 125 million actually voted in 2012. Why does the media give so attention at a few hundred or even a thousand or so people who may go nuts over some silly comment on social media, who choose Twitter and Facebook users who are not representative of the rest of the population to speak for the rest of us? What does the media
Preach it, Stu.
All due respect, that's not what I said. What I said was that those little things on social media is what gets people's attention. I can show you articles from my news operation, from my company, from any source you want to name where there's plenty of substantive things, very important things, life-changing things, historic things that don't get people's attention. That's what I said.
Okay, panel, as positive to the Supreme Court decision not to stay this appeal court, it isn't a game over. Republican state legislators immediately sent guidance to Republican-dominated local election boards telling them to retain as many restrictions as possible. Shameless and disgusting.
Yep.
These partisan local boards must still be forced to do their job fairly.
Very good point.
And then somebody just says what I mentioned before, talk about Hitler. Trump just told a veterans group that the Pledge of Allegiance should be mandatory and like that.
Also, there was that throwaway line yesterday that not a lot of people made about it, about instead of worrying about immigration, that Hillary Clinton and the liberals were worried about global warming. That was a line in the speech, too. That was a little scary.
Foolish
from
Democrats.
Last night. Yeah.
Yeah. Short-sighted Democrats.
We are out of... We'll end there. We're out of time, and we'll be back tomorrow, and we'll talk more and about this and other issues. Again, a big thank you to Stu Shinsky for making the trip. Thank you very much, sir.
Pleasure to do so.
Rosemary, we'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah,
Alan, see you tomorrow, and we'll be here, and we'll continue our program right after this.